Yeah, Don't Delay brings you.
It's not good.
It's bad. It's just bad.
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. We're down a little bit on numbers this week, and I'm joined by just Frosty in the room. How you doing, Frosty?
Not bad, mate. On a quality over quantity.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave and Cam don't listen to the podcast. So, as you know, you'll be fine saying things like that.
Perfect.
They both listen. We're recording on a very rainy Thursday night in Wellington. It was not fun getting out to Island Bay, was it, Frosty?
No, it was a shitstorm.
Yes, but we are replacing Dave and Cam with Wellington Phoenix head coach Ufuk Tale. We're going to get him on the line. Obviously, he's not here in person, and have a chat to him about how it's going so far. I mean, do you reckon he's going to be upbeat about the season so far and kind of tell us that we just need to wait and see because it'll all come right? Or do you reckon he'll be kind of the same vibes we've had over the past two games?
I can't imagine Ufuk Tale ever being upbeat.
Yep.
I think deadpan regardless, but I think he is realistic enough that he's not going to be saying that
everything's fine.
It's just going to be like everything will come right, I think, will be the message.
Which, based on the Newcastle game, we'll talk a little bit more in depth after we talk to Ufi, but the Newcastle game was almost there. Like, two bad individual errors to give away two very good chances, which were both slotted, and then we hit the post twice.
So. Yeah, I think dominant, but yeah. We'll get into it later, eh?
We'll see. Anyway, let's call up Ufi and get him on the line.
Hello.
Ufuk Tale, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's probably, the weather's probably a lot nicer over in Wollongong than it is here on a rainy Thursday night in Wellington. You must be enjoying being back in Australia after a year or so away.
Yeah, it's nice to be back in Australia, but the weather's not currently any better. It's been raining here for the last couple of days as well, so, you know, a little bit different. We're having a wetter summer here back in Australia.
Yeah, it's that kind of warms my heart to hear that it's not actually that much better for you guys. How was it settling down in Wollongong this season? Obviously, not able to play in Wellington and having to find a base over there. What was it like this time around versus the previous couple of times you've gone over and had to set up a temporary camp, or is it something that's a little bit more permanent?
Well, the good thing of coming into Wollongong was we weren't based in a hotel like we were previously post-COVID towards the back end of last season. So when we first came in for pre-season in Wollongong, we actually all stayed at the university where we trained together for 3 weeks, which gave the staff and players time to settle in and find accommodation and where they wanted to live during the season. So on that side of things, it's been good in the sense that we're not confined to a hotel.
Yeah,
and I think the players have settled in pretty well. We've got a young squad. We don't have a lot of married couples, so a few of the senior players have wives and kids, but most of the guys have girlfriends, and some of them come over as well. So everyone's settled in quite well. The only disappointment is obviously we're not playing back in Wellington. You know, we don't have our home fans behind us when we play the game. So, that's probably one of the disappointing parts for this season.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about that. What's that like playing in front of a crowd where people are allowed to come and support, but you're playing a home game in front of very few home supporters? Is that a weird feeling, or is it more or less strange than playing in front of essentially nobody in the back half of last season?
Well, it's nice to have people come back into the stadiums, which has been great because, players want to play in front of a crowd and perform and then do well. But also I think, home fans make a massive difference as well. That support you get, if you're 1-0 up and you need to grind out the last 10 minutes or, you're chasing the game and you get that support from the fans, that does, for me, I have a belief that that does help the players. So it's like I said, we had, maybe 1,700 at our last game against Newcastle Jets, which came and supported us. But it's nothing like when you play, in your own stadium with your own fans.
Has the Wollongong population, despite not turning up in big numbers, kind of got behind the team? Has it been a little bit of a community feel there, or is it very much like we're away from home, we're somewhere else, and we need to just push on and deal with that?
Yeah, it's been a little bit difficult in the sense that we haven't been able to get out into the community with all the restrictions currently in Australia.
Yeah,
we would have liked to have gone out into the community and done more stuff with the community, with more promos with them, even with our school starting as well. But currently, we're a little bit restricted in that area to actually get out. So the only way we can get our voice out is through media, and obviously, you know, with the memberships that we have now with the fraternity club and stuff like that. So it's been a little bit difficult on that side of things. But they say that like Wollongong is a footballing town, and at the moment with the last game we had only 25% of the gate open. So yeah. You know, the more things ease off, I'm happy that more people come through the gates.
Yeah, and in terms of training sessions and anything like that, is that almost business as usual in the way that you get to run the footballing side of being in Wollongong outside of game days?
Yeah, look, we like I said, we train at the university. We have our offices there. You know, we have our physio room and a change room for the players, and our gym's there as well. So, you know, we have a field that we train on, and it's business as usual. You know, it's not Martin Lucky where we normally train at, but yeah. it's a field with grass on it that we're able to train on and be able to prepare for games.
So let's move to the football. Obviously, you've got a bunch of new players. You mentioned the squad's quite young this season. From what we've noticed, the playing style hasn't changed too much or too significantly to what it was last season. Has that been an actual impetus from you to try and keep things as similar as possible, even with new players, or is it kind of trying to adapt things to the new personnel that you do have in the team?
Yeah, look, we try to keep it pretty similar to last season, and obviously the new players that come in bring different attributes. And look, they'll slowly grow into what I ask them and what my expectations of their roles are as well. And the good thing is, like I said, we kept most of the core group from last season as well, so we haven't had to start from scratch like I did last season. So the players already understand it and know it, and it's just about the new boys adapting. And I think they've come around pretty quickly, and I think they understand it quite well. For me, it's more about putting the ball in the back of the net, being clinical to win games.
Yeah, and some of those new pros like Laws at the back and McGarry up front have shown that they are absolutely A-League quality. Has that been warming to see that those guys can slot straight into a team and kind of bring what they need to stake a first team spot?
Well, my job is to get the best out of people, and at the same time to simplify the game for them so they can understand their roles and do it to the best of their ability and the attributes that they have. So, you know, that's what we try to work with and the players that we have. And I think people need to understand or say, you know, Jimmy hasn't played for a long time. Probably his last game was last year in February,
yep.
You know, overseas in Holland. So, you know, they need games and they need consistency. And, you know, that's what we had last season as well, where we started off a little bit slow. I don't think we started off slow this year. I think we played some really good football, just haven't been rewarded for the football that we've been played. So, result-wise. But, you know, they'll grow the more games that they play and the more confident they get, the more chances we have of winning games.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about the results so far, if you feel like they've been unlucky or whether the team's been left wanting. But obviously you're in the unlucky camp and things could have gone with an inch or two to the right. I mean, the Newcastle game, for example, literally two hit the posts and two small mistakes to give away two goals. Is that encouraging? Is it just you training more of the same and getting everybody familiar with the system, or are you kind of trying to work out what changes you do need to make to try and get those 3 points?
Yeah, we might have to tweak a few things in the way that we set up, because I think we're a very attacking team, as you can see.
Yep.
And we like to go forward a lot as well. But, you know, when you're most vulnerable when you're actually in possession. So, you know, one thing that we need to improve on this week and that we worked on as well is, you know, the transition moment when we're in possession, if we lose the ball and how we need to deal with each situation. But I don't like making excuses. Like the Sydney game, you know, maybe we could have got a point. I don't think we were great, but at the end of the day, maybe we could have got a point out of the game. The Carter game, you know, it's up there. I thought we were quite comfortable until the red card. And even against Newcastle, you know, you have 65% possession against Newcastle. You have 23 shots and we score a goal from a penalty. You know, it makes life difficult in winning games that they have. You know, two transition moments where they come and they hurt you. So, you know, those little things that we'll probably need to tweak this week against Central Coast. But I believe we're heading in the right direction with the football that we're playing.
Frosty here, Offie. I've kind of got a question about this young fella, Laws. It's a guy that we haven't seen a lot in New Zealand. Have you worked with him before? Was he part of the under-20s or development program? Because he seems to have basically just come out of nowhere and played pretty well.
Yeah, Joshua I worked with previously when I was working with the Joeys, with the under-17s national team. And I also worked with him when I used to go away with the under-23s national team as well. So I know Josh Laws from since he was 15, 16 years old. We previously looked last season to, or actually wanted to bring him in last season, but he had already signed at Fortuna Dusseldorf back in Germany. So, you know, it was a little bit too late to bring him in for last season. So the opportunity arose this season. And I like balance in the back line, because having a lefty makes things easy where players can open up and play a forward ball with their left foot, where, you know, we asked Luke De Vier to do a lot of that last season, even though he's a natural right footer. So I think Laws he's done well since he's come in. I think we can still get a lot more out of him, and I think he'll grow the more games that he plays.
How's Reno Biscoppo doing on the injury front? We haven't seen him so far this season.
Yeah, Reno's tracking well, so he'll be not involved this weekend, but I'm sure if things track well in the way that he's going, we'll hopefully get him some minutes into his legs against Sydney FC.
And just talking about Central Coast, you mentioned kind of tweaking a few things, but is there a game plan to kind of combat the unexpected, or you might not say unexpected, but good results they've had, obviously sitting top of the table. Is that a consideration at all when you go into a game like this, the team's doing better than they have done previously and riding high?
Yeah, look, Central Coast will be full of confidence in the way that they've started their season, so they'll be on the high. But for me, I still think we are a good team, and the way that we play our football, and, you know, we'll try to, you know, get some defined advantages of where we need to hurt them and try to stop where they are strong as well. So, and for me, look, at the end of the day, I'm not going to overhaul the whole team because of the results that we've had. If we do that, we'll lose our way, I think, too quickly. And everything will go out the window. So one thing that we need to do is what we're doing at the moment, and we need to do it better.
It's the finishing, right? It's just finishing those chances off once they get to the top of the box.
Yeah, well, that's why the guys at the top get the big bucks, you know, because they're the ones that put the ball in the back of the net, you know. So, you know, it'd be a lot more difficult if we weren't creating opportunities, you know, and we can't, when we're not getting those areas. Then that means there's a lot more that we need to improve on. But we are getting in the right areas. We are getting the ball where we need to get it. It's just that we need to hit the back of the net.
But that corner routine with Bawley hitting the post, was that something you worked on the training ground, or did they just pull that off on the field and almost nick the goal back?
No, nothing's made up on the field. Everything's worked on. So, you know, Chris Greenacre does our set pieces for us, and he'll go through with the players of where we can exploit them. And, you know, that was the one where we work on the near post where he comes, and, you know, for a bit more luck, it actually hit the inside of the post and goes in. But unfortunately, we know we didn't have the luck where the ball bounced the right way. But like I said, for me, the most important thing is yes, we want a good outcome. Yes, we want to win games. But if our focus is on just the winning the games, I think we'll lose track of what we want to achieve. So the first and foremost thing I ask my players is to worry about the performance, and the rest will come.
Yeah, it certainly seems that it's tracking in the right direction from what we can see on telly over here. It's a real shame that we can't get to the games and cheer you on. But, yeah, wish you all the best for the rest of the games. We probably won't get you on by the end of the season, but hopefully things turn around. I'm sure they will, and we'll start seeing some results like last season. So thank you so much for joining us, Ufi, and we do wish the boys all the best. We know it mustn't have been hard to drop everything in Wellington and head over for the season. So super appreciative of everything you're doing, and hope the results come as they should.
No, my pleasure, mate. Any time. And hopefully we can, you know, put a smile on people's faces back home in Wellington and New Zealand as well with what we're trying to produce on the field.
Very good. Cheers, Ufi.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And that was Ufuk Tale. Obviously, he played a straight back to some of the questions, but others he was quite on the offensive about. I mean, he certainly rejects the notion that the team's playing badly. He thinks that they're doing all the right things and the results will come.
Yeah, I definitely got that impression. And because he mentioned not just Newcastle, he mentioned Sydney as well. And
yeah, MacArthur. Yeah,
that Sydney game in particular, a couple of screamers, which, you know, you both of those goals, you could be up for goal of the season, you know, any other season or past. So, you know, you got to take that with a grain of salt. And then MacArthur, we were decent in up until that red card. And Newcastle, we were dominant. So, yeah, he does have a point. I was kind of interested. He at least gave the hint that he was looking to, one, target the transition.
Yeah.
And two, he was looking to tweak a couple of things.
I mean, but it's that, tweak, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would say that that's pretty much, I mean, it's still, like he says, early season.
Oh, yeah, three games.
You don't want to be dropping two or three players, but you know that you've got Rufer, he'll come back and presumably slot straight back in. I got the read that maybe he was talking about the kind of gamble with Soterio. Because certainly that was a major roll of the dice for this early in the season.
Well, it is, but it isn't in the same way that it's because you've got players come back from injury and players yet to find their feet properly. They haven't started games. That's why Soterio gets a start, because he's just been in the squad the whole time and is fit.
Yeah, I do kind of understand it in that Soterio, he's not a form player up and down. He's fairly consistent. Unfortunately, that consistency doesn't net you a lot of goals, but he's got a massive engine and he's very fast. He gives you that physical approach up front and can play off the shoulder. I don't agree with playing him because I think you need that goal threat.
I mean, last year you had him, Ball, and Uli as your front three at the start of the season, and it didn't quite gel. And then all of a sudden, once old Gary Hooper started getting fit again, all of a sudden the Uli Ball thing started firing a bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
So and you hope that would happen this time around when Tomar gets a bit more fit.
It almost feels like that it was a 1-2. He was just trying to get Soterio in, play off the shoulder, drag that defence away from Hamed to give him some bit of time, you know, where he can basically employ the class that he definitely has and get involved. But unfortunately, it was, rather than it being a 1-2, Soterio got the chances because they were dropping for him.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, his finishing is not top draw.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Newcastle game. Obviously, a 2-1 loss over the weekend. 7-minute goal to Yule. What's his first name? I can't remember. Neither can Frosty by the looks of his face.
No, I get mixed up with all the brothers.
Yeah, and then there is the 49th-minute goal to Roy O'Donovan. Let's talk about the Yule goal first, because it was from an attack that we were kind of trying to pass the ball around in the front third, and we gave the ball away. Two passes later, the ball was in the back of the net, which obviously getting caught in the counter like that is not great. Ufi talked about that when he said that sometimes you're most vulnerable when you got the ball. But for De Vier to come in and kind of get to the player and not quite do anything at all other than let the player turn around them was disappointing.
If you come out of the line as a defender, you have to get the player. If you don't get the player, you've got to take the man, especially when you're deep into their half. I mean, he was 10 metres into their half at least.
Yeah, certainly inside the box.
Yeah.
On the edge of the box. That's the circle, sorry.
He has to shut that down straight away. As soon as he's out of that line, otherwise there's way too many gaps.
When you say take the player, you mean concede a yellow card?
Take the professional foul. And I know I sound cynical, but
7th minute of the game, centre back on a yellow card.
What was the option?
I mean,
he completely mistimed it.
Yep.
He's not quick anyway. So why he thought he was going to do that, I think he should have hedged. They had basically a 4-on-1. Basically, if they all started drifting back, they buy themselves some space and time for basically one of the midfield guys to run out.
Was it Laws that ended up having to chase Yul?
Yeah, what happened was De Vier went up high. The guy turned around him. And Laws had to crab across in case the guy dribbled with it. As soon as it happened, there was a gap in behind him. He chased pretty hard and almost cut him off. But, unfortunately, it was a great finish by Yul too.
This was a good goal by Newcastle. Like, this is the goal that I would be very happy if the Phoenix would score, where you win the ball back, two passes. I don't know who it was who turned –
I think it might have been O'Donovan.
Yeah, maybe. Well, the pass to release Yule is great. And then the finish, I think we took one or two touches and then finished it perfectly. Like, you see the number of those that go over the crossbar or wide or straight into the keeper and the A-League is high. So it was a good goal from Newcastle's perspective, but we gave him the chance to score that good goal, which
is
the frustrating thing.
It always felt like
it
was going to be a goal. The first touches that he got before he played the shot, you look at say, Soterio, those touches just before, if he has one touch and then hits, he's normal. He kind of gets okay. If he has two touches or hits it straight away, no, he just loses it there. And that's the art of that being the striker, of just putting the ball in the right spot in your stride so you don't have to slow down and let the defender get a go. And, yeah, he did it beautifully. Unfortunately, it was a bit of the same with O'Donovan.
Let's talk about the second goal then. Where obviously O'Donovan released, and I can't remember who made that pass either. But
again, it was the broken line again. It was De Vea up high, Laws having to track back. And I think Laws would have gotten him, but Marinovic just had a moment.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he thought he could get there?
And he by the time he got to the top of the box, he realised he couldn't. He came out and was kind of like, do I take him? And then went, red card.
No. Yeah, which is correct. The correct decision-making process.
Yeah, I won't argue with that. Most keepers probably would have had a go and picked up the red card by accident.
Yeah, an accidental handball or something like that.
Yeah, or just taking a leg, and it's kind of, the ref would have no choice.
He's kind of saved in the way that he got nowhere near it. Like, there wasn't ever a chance of him being able to make a tackle there.
Yeah.
The problem is that by being nowhere near it, it left an open goal. It was a good finish by O'Donovan, because those are easy to screw up as well. He had to kind of curve it around him a little bit. You look at the camera angle, it's right behind O'Donovan, and the ball definitely goes outside the post and curves in.
Yeah.
So a good finish, but we gifted that one on a plate to them.
Yeah, it was very much. It seemed like we were playing a partial high line, or at least the back four didn't know if we were playing high or not.
Yeah.
Transition ball again, and it's just like, nah.
The frustrating thing was, if not for those two mistakes by two individual players, essentially, they might have still scored other goals. We don't know. But that was the difference. That was all the difference was, because we were on top for so much of that game.
And don't forget the two sheets of varnish on Borley's and Uli's shots too, off post.
Well, yeah, Uli's was well worked. That was poor defending by Newcastle to give the ball back so close to their goal. But that's the kind of thing that I felt at Uli's feet, and I thought that's going in. Like, the way that he put that curl on it, I thought, for all money, even if I hit the post, it was going to like bounce in. And
I don't know how he got so much power on it without a backswing.
I don't think there was that much power on it. I think it was just timed well placed.
Beautifully.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, it had a fair bit of toe on it, because the keeper was – he wasn't getting it.
Yeah, no.
And unfortunately, Borley's little set piece.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Ufi, obviously, that was worked – he said it was worked on the training ground by Chris Greenacre, which – for the Phoenix to be pulling off, I don't think Uli quite understood why. I was asking if we actually worked on that. But the Phoenix to pull off a set piece like that would have been incredible. And it was, again, so close to going in. Even in off the post, it was like not far off it. So it was a good flick on from Bully, though. Perfect height for him. And they all nailed that.
From Ball?
From the header.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I think Uli put the ball into him, I'm guessing. You might have been told that I watched at the pub, which means you can't quite see all the players and things like that. There's a lot going on. But, so close. And if those two goals go in and you maybe don't concede one of the others, you win the game 2-1.
Yep.
And that's the kind of game it was.
Or 3-2 to be.
Or 3-2.
Yeah. I mean, the penalty was well won too.
Yeah, definitely a pen. It was the only question about it was it in or out of the box? It looked on the line to me, which obviously is a penalty, but if he called it outside the box, VAR wouldn't be overturning that.
Yeah, I think the contact started outside but finished
inside.
Because it looked like he got him with the leg and then just foot on foot at the very end of it. A great run by Devlin,
because
he's come from very deep. He's obviously realised that they need to spark something, and I like that of a young player, especially a midfielder who's like, actually, we need to get something out of this. I need to put myself in the mix.
Well, him and Louis Fenton had a little 1-2 and things in that same position before I managed to release him. So it's good to see Louis getting involved with that kind of thing as well, and being able to link up with the player on that flank rather than having to do it all himself, which we've seen before. He'd not quite been able to do.
I hadn't even realised it was Louis. I was thinking, Payne's figuring stuff out there.
I mean, I only noticed this before we recorded the podcast when I watched the highlights. That was the first time I noticed it was Fenton doing this stuff. So
yeah, I was the replay after the pen, they kind of they showed something on it. I'm like, it's Louis.
Yeah.
That explains, because I've really struggled with Payne this year. He has not looked as good as he did last season. ponderous, like he's a little in his own head, maybe. Or
that's interesting.
Again, this is something I said to you before the pod started, was second season blues is it's a common concept across sport. Is like people start working out coaches and players in that second season because they've had a good look at them now and they can make plans for the for a team, you know, in pre-season and building up to it. You know that Ufi is going to put out a 4-2-2-2 squad and that there are certain players who are going to be in certain positions and you can kind of target those as, you know, either weak or strong points to try and counter. And the same with on an individual basis, knowing that, you know, a player will do this or he's got no left foot or he's got no, you know, he won't dribble at you, he'll only turn and pass. So I feel like there's maybe a bit of that going on as well, and then a bit of a lack of luck and a couple of – and unfortunately losing some of our players up the spine, losing Steinman, Taylor.
Steinman, Taylor, Hooper.
Yeah. Obviously, Uli's kind of makes the one tricky part out of that though, that spine of four. So
yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the lineup because I couldn't remember who was playing, but Hemed started this game. Is it the first time this season? I can't remember if we did MacArthur or not, but
no.
This is why we need Cam and Dave here, because they know this stuff. They just know it. Yeah.
History and stats.
No.
It's not us.
My history is good starting 5 years ago. I can remember most things before then, but now it doesn't stick in the brain anymore.
Still a drunken haze.
Yeah. But Hemed started the game, and I didn't notice much from him.
No, I think having someone alongside him that isn't going to play him into the game.
Yeah.
Like Sotirio, for his strengths, his weaknesses are shooting and passing. I realise that sounds very rough, but that he's not a natural passer.
Well, I've seen the comparisons made on the internet, on the forums and places to Apia. I mean, I think he's a better player than Apia is.
Much better.
But there's a certain point where, as a footballer growing up, you can just run fast, so therefore you are the best. Well, but in the A-League, you kind of hit that level and you can't quite progress past it. So Terry hits that, I think, where his pace isn't quite enough
to
bring someone like Toma into the game.
I think I'd argue that Quibini Arapia, his level is below A-League because all he's got is pace.
Yeah.
He hasn't got the engine that Sotirio does. And I think that if you don't at least mention that he has two positive attributes, unfortunately both of them are physical. They're not skill-based. And let's face it, there have been a lot of players that have played very top-level football that have had those two and the ability to say, for example, finish, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, your Torres, your Lineker kind of players. They can go and go and go, and so long as they get the last touch, champion, world beaters.
Yeah.
You know.
Uli's pen, the penalty itself, well taken.
I love the way he takes pens.
Well taken.
Yeah, just as, like, he doesn't stutter. But just that
slow.
Just that slow and bam. Forces the opportunity.
Yeah.
Just the way he can generate power and accuracy without a big backswing.
It's like we saw that with that shot.
Yeah.
Like, incredible.
It's great technique.
And then we didn't really look like we were going to score a goal after that. Like, Newcastle dropped back and we were on the attack. But there was no moment where it was like, we're going to score this. Although, if you pointed out correctly that we had 23 shots, 8 of them on target and 66% possession, but just really there weren't that many golden opportunities other than those two that we hit the post on.
The ball was too slow.
Yeah.
I mean, once Newcastle had sucker punched us twice, they knew that they could shut the game down, they could drop back, defend.
Yep.
And we don't have the players that are going to beat A-League players one-on-one. So we're not going to dribble past them. So that means we have to get quick passing to get in behind players. And the only person that can really do that accurately is Uli.
Yeah.
But he will tend to turn and recycle the ball.
Yeah, and does a great job of it.
Yeah, he does. But it just means that we struggle to break down defenders, defences, especially organised ones. I think the team really misses Piscopo.
Yeah, that's why I asked Ufi when he was going to come back, because, him slotted in instead of Sotirio
or Lewis,
something like that would be great for the team, but obviously not the case. He's not going to play against the Mariners on the weekend, but
yeah,
it's a shame.
You weren't looking up, otherwise you would have seen the look on my face. It was not happy. Because I think, because this is what Piscopo does better than Lewis is, yes, he can, he's the all-round footballer that Lewis is, but his ability to dribble at players means that it forces the fullback to sit on him. It forces the centre-back to keep an eye on him as well if he gets past the fullback, which means that he's only got half an eye on Hamed. Means that Hamed's basically only got one centre-back to worry about.
Yeah,
and that, I think, it's kind of a one gets you two. It's like, one, you get his dribbling, but two, you can also draw defenders and mean that Hamed can get some space and time.
Yeah.
And that means Uli gets space and time.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is that they know how to play Uli now, where it's the same with Rowley's second season.
Yeah, exactly.
You just mark him out of the game and he's nullified.
Because he just didn't have any support that could take on that role.
Yeah. The upshot is that Newcastle have their first win of the season after five games, and they jump ahead of us on the table and putting us into last place. So sorry. The other games, we've had quite a lot since we last recorded, but Brisbane Roar knocked off Newcastle before we played Newcastle, 2-1, and Perth Glory got their season underway with a 5-3 win over Adelaide, and then they followed it up 3 days later with a 5-4 loss to Western United.
I just don't understand what, like, Perth, are they playing like a 10-1 attack or something?
Well, so I watched that Western United game, and it was 1-0 at the half, which was fair. They deserved to be down. And then Western just decided to stop defending, and Perth scored two goals. And then Perth decided to stop defending, and West United scored two goals. And they kind of just traded goals as they went up until 5-4. It was just bizarre. Every attack, every single time you got forward, you knew the ball was going to the back of the net.
It was good finishing.
It was good finishing, but the defense was horrific.
Dane Ingham, oh my Lord.
That
captain clearing of the ball where it went between his legs and just popped, I think, for Niroli. And then in the game they against Adelaide, he went up for a header. There was a man that he was going over the top of, but that he wasn't even contesting the ball and wasn't interfering with him. And he's just missed it cold. The guys just turned and run past him. And oh, my God.
You'd be kicking yourself if you were a Perth Glory player, because all you have to do is stop one of those goals going in. And there was so much chance to do any of them, but just, yeah. It was the most ridiculous second half of football I've ever seen.
When you know that your team can score 9 goals in 2 games, just defend okay.
Yeah, exactly. Concede 2.
Yeah.
And you'll win the game. Bizarre. That's the first time ever that there's been 8 goals in an A-League second half. It was just bonkers. We've seen high-scoring first halves quite a lot, and then it tightens up. This was the opposite of that. Adelaide United and Melbourne Victory played out a 1-0 win for Adelaide in Adelaide. I think that's the first time Melbourne have crossed a border and gone to play somewhere else, but I might be wrong. Melbourne Victory then hosted Perth Glory on the weekend and won that one 2-1. They looked for all money like they were going to lose 1-0, and then scored 2 goals in the, what was that?
Who scored the 2? He hasn't scored for Victory before.
Jay Brimmer. No idea what his first name is. But Jake.
He's the former Perth player.
86 minutes and a 90th minute penalty. Cancels out Bruno Fularoli's 62nd minute goal. So, hey, at least Perth didn't concede 4 or 5. There we go. That's a good sign, right, for them?
Oh, my God.
But they should have had a victory here. I genuinely didn't mean that. And I'm ashamed that I've done it. Bizarre results all round in the A-League so far, which brings us to the game against Central Coast Mariners, which is this weekend, Sunday night at 6:05 p.m. New Zealand time from the Central Coast. And they are flying high, but they are beatable.
You look at their squad, it's not – I mean, they're still starting Matt Simon.
Oh, yeah.
That should tell you.
But for all intents and purposes, they shouldn't be on top of the table. They've had some good results, but I guess that's the A-League this season. You're trying to get them some results, and you can because the teams are so different, and you go to top of the table.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's they've been consistent.
Yep.
They've been decent.
Yep.
I think the two most consistent teams in the league that I've seen, and to be fair, I haven't watched a lot of the A-League this season, but it seems like it's us and them. We've been 5% off and they've been 5% on, and all of a sudden they're sitting at the top of the table and we're sitting at the bottom with 1 point. And that's frustrating as hell, because I look at that squad and go, one, is Matt Simon still playing? Two, is he not been arrested yet?
Yeah.
And three, how is it him and, I mean, I can't remember how many Central Coast players we, because there was some stat going around about how many were playing in the A-League at the moment, but playing for other teams.
Right.
So you'd basically the cream of the Mariners is out playing somewhere else. And so you've got the second and third string Mariners team who's going, we don't fucking care.
Yeah.
We're still top of the table.
Yeah. I mean, and it works for them. I don't think we should be any more worried about them than we were against the Jets, for example. Like, even though one team's been firing, one team's been not, I think, like Oofy said, if we keep working at the things that we know we can do well and make them better, finishing, and if we manage to just cut out those mistakes at the back from certain players,
Devere
Marinovic, obviously, I think that we might have a 2-1 in here. If we play the same way we did against the Jets and we can't score and we give away silly goals, we'll lose 3-0.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is if you do both those things, you'll lose to anyone. You'll lose to my cap team.
Yeah.
So that's just stupid. They have to, I mean, that.
Hang on. You're playing cap 10 now?
No. I'm playing Prezi. So I was meaning my cap team before because they're worse than the Prezi's team for.
Sorry.
My Prezi's team is actually pretty decent.
I couldn't let you get away with that one, claiming you played cap 10, Frosty.
I've never played that low.
Really?
No,
yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah. Anyway, what was the point you were making?
That basically, if we can improve 10%, we've got this game.
Yeah.
Assuming that the Mariners don't improve as well. But, they're confident. The thing is, if we can keep them under the pump and we can just get a couple of little errors in them, this year they haven't experienced that kind of their typical issues. So trying to remind them of, because a lot of them have been Mariners players for a while and they've been, you know, cellar dwellers for a long time, kind of reminding them of that and not verbally, but obviously just kind of getting them under the pump and making them realise that, no, this is not a game that you're just going to boss because it's a season.
Yeah.
I don't know where we're getting that 10% from because, as you say, it's finishing, and finishing is very hard to just get right on the day.
The good thing is the chances are coming. It's not like the ball's never making it through the midfield and we need to work on something drastic to fix. The chances are there. They have been there all season. They were there against Sydney. They were there against MacArthur. They were there against Newcastle. That's promising. I don't think it's doom and gloom yet. We don't need to change anything significantly yet. Just going to put the ball in the back of the net.
I agree. Our chances, they're not half chances. I mean, we do have a lot of half chances, but we're getting those three-quarter chances. Yeah. We're just not able to either get those fully-fledged, yep, there's an open goal for us, or there's a one-on-one with a keeper. We don't seem to get those, but we do get those shots inside the box.
We didn't even mention Devere's header from that other corner yet. So.
What a boomer.
Yeah, great. It was a good save.
That is a good forehead he's got, and he's utilised it very well.
There's a lot of forehead there, isn't there?
Yeah. It goes all the way back.
Yeah. Anyway, score prediction from you. I'm going to say 2-1 Phoenix because I think we can't keep losing.
I don't think we're going to turn the corner straight away. I think there's not enough time between games to really get our shit together. But I would call it a 1-1, 2-1 draw.
Yeah, fair. Western Sydney Wanderers are playing Newcastle Friday night, 9:05 PM. Reckon Western Sydney.
I've got no fucking idea, to be honest.
Yeah, no idea either.
I mean,
who knows? Who knows what any of these results, to be honest, any of these games?
Up until the game against the Knicks, the Phoenix were the same as us. They were playing pretty reasonably, just conceding a couple of shitty goals and looking like they should be okay.
Yeah.
But not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Wanderers might sneak it, but I don't. I mean,
who knows? Who knows? MacArthur hosting Sydney FC. Again, could go either way. Sydney playing badly. MacArthur not really firing anymore.
They're inconsistent as hell,
MacArthur. Yeah, they're up and down. Speaking of inconsistent, Melbourne Victory are going away to Western United. That could be 5-4. That could be 0-0. Who knows?
I can't see Western United not winning this.
Really?
They've got too much ability on the pitch.
Yeah, but they defended like horse shit.
They also had Dura on the field.
Oh, yeah. Like, and he's not the quickest player anymore. He's probably one of the slowest defenders in the league. And yeah. they had four goals scored against them.
Yes, yeah. I agree. I don't think he'll be playing this.
Now, that is on Saturday at 7:05 p.m. The MacArthur game is at 9 p.m. on Saturday. And then at 11 p.m. on Saturday, Brisbane are hosting Adelaide. And then we're on Sunday, and then after us on Sunday, Melbourne are hosting Perth Glory. Surely Melbourne score 4 here and win 4-1, 4-0. Who knows?
This whole season is just it's a magic eight ball. That's ridiculous. Of football.
There's a Wednesday game next week, the Mariners versus Melbourne City. Fuck knows what's going to go on in that. So.
Yeah, I think you might see the ship change. If we beat the Mariners, I think City might put them to the sword.
Mm. Yeah, I want to say that the reduced prep time for this game is going to be a factor, but I don't. At the end of the season, when every team's had to try and squeeze in all these games that have been cancelled, when we're not playing Victory next weekend, for example, it's tricky to say whether this is going to make a difference because they're getting their games played, which could be huge at the end of the season.
Mm.
It could be huge having played a midweek game and a weekend game four times in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, I think you definitely want them at the beginning of the season rather than the end. I mean, when you're tired getting it to the end of a season and you've got double features every week, I can't imagine trying to do that.
Hey, speaking of heading towards the end of the season, there was another round of the New Zealand ISPS Handa Premiership.
Oh, nice. So,
yeah.
I like it, Pat.
Yeah, that was a good seg. With some interesting results. The big game of the weekend was the final ever World Clasico, which was looking dicey for T-dubs for a while there. Did you catch any of this on TV?
Only the highlights, but there were a few.
Yeah, well, the Wenix went up 2-0 pretty early on in the game. I don't have a list of goal scorers in front of me, but they were well-worked goals, and it was definitely deserved for the Wenix. T-Dubs just looking like West United at the back, just gifting goals away, which was poor.
I can't remember whether it was first or second goal, but just allowing the Wenix lads to pass in around the 18-yard box. It's like, no, these are good little players.
Yeah,
that just gave them time and space and just...
Well, the Wenix have shown this season and previous season, but this season in particular, they are no worse than anybody else in the league.
Mm.
On their day, they could beat anybody.
And have.
And they looked like they were going to do it. This time around, T-Dubs got a goal back before the half, which I think was really important, went in 2-1 at the break. But Andy Bevan just pulled the reins and pulled
the trigger as well.
Yeah, exactly. He went, this is not a game that we're going to lose. He must have sensed that up in the northeastern suburbs in Auckland City were playing out a draw. But Andy just pulled, he scored two and was incredibly unlucky not to have a hat trick because his third goal was stolen from him by an attempt at a goal line clearance. Let's put it straight into the back of the net, which was given as an own goal.
But, what?
Yeah. Bullshit. I don't think it should have been. I think this was absolutely an Andy Bevan goal. It was partially saved, I think, by the keeper, and then it was rolling over there, and it would have gone in the net if not for the defender coming in to try and clear it. But it was given as an own goal, and it's a shame for Bevs because that would have been a nice hat trick. But it ended up being 5-2 to the T-Doves, which was really important. I mean, they've had so many draws this season, and if that game had been another draw, it would have been all over for first place, I think.
And you want to start pulling a good performance together at the end of the season because they've been so patchy.
Exactly. But if they can start playing, I'm not going to say they played badly, but if you can play and have defensive weaknesses but still manage to win the games, that's the sign of a good team. And that's a sign of what Team Wellington needs to be to try and topple Auckland City this season.
Yeah, I think that maybe there was a psychological hangover with Auckland City not going, and you know maybe that's upset their rhythm a bit. Club World Cup.
You mean for Auckland in particular?
Yeah. Maybe that just kind of boiled over on the pitch.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that result was pretty.
Eastern was good though.
They are good. I mean, the one thing you can say about the Handy Prem this year, anyone can beat anyone.
Yeah,
and all the teams have been playing pretty well. I mean, I don't think. I mean, what was it? Hawke's Bay was sitting bottom of the table,
but could beat anybody.
Yeah, like, could have easily beaten everyone that they played.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think I'd be very surprised if Auckland City wobble again.
Mm.
So T-Dubs, need to start getting 90 good minutes in.
So that result was 1-1 between Eastern Suburbs and Auckland City. I think Auckland went up and then Eastern not conceded. What's the – equaliser. Equaliser is the word I'm looking for. Late. Whitehawk and Canterbury got a 3-3 draw, which helps neither of them out really. Canterbury looking for a win to have a shot to stay in the top four. They could have jumped up above Hamilton with a win because Hamilton went down 4-1 to Hawke's Bay United, which just shows that Hawke's Bay United, bottom of the table at the time, can beat anybody. Hamilton were looking good this season and are still in the top four. So,
well, you look at the points table.
It's
like the bottom player team is, what, 7 or something? It's the Knicks?
Not quite. So Team Wellington and Auckland City are both on 17 at the top. It's head-to-head, which is currently 2-2 as the decider at the end of the season. It was a 2-2 draw. So Team Wellington currently ahead on goal difference. But at the end of the season, it will be whoever wins the next game between the two teams. Then it's Eastern Suburbs and Hamilton both on 12 points, so 5 behind. So looking like with 5 games to go, a clear top two and maybe the rest are kind of in the chasing pack. But they're by no means safe. Canterbury United on 11 points. Hawke's Bay on 10 points now. Like, despite a bunch of bad results for Christmas, they are right in it. They're only 2 points behind both Eastern and Hamilton. Then 1 point behind is the Wenix and Waitak on 8. So you can rule out the Wenix because they can't make it. Waitak possibly...
They're not allowed to. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Waitak possibly could do it, but probably a bit of a stretch. But yeah, you've got those four teams, Eastern Suburbs, Hamilton, Canterbury and Hawke's Bay, all vying for 2 spots in the playoffs. It's going to be a lot of fun, this
ultimate.
This back half of the season, yeah.
The ultimate ISB is Handy Prem.
Yes. T-Dubs are hosting Waitak here this weekend, Davey F, at 1 p.m. on Saturday. Must win for Team Wellington, and although our goal difference doesn't come down to it, I'd hope that they could score 3 or 4 and not concede this time around. It's probably a good chance to try and keep that clean sheet. Hamilton hosting Canterbury, Auckland City travelling to Hawke's Bay, and Eastern Suburbs hosting the Wenix. So you could see things change slightly at the end of this round, but possibly not either.
Yeah, it could either be very clear or we could still be just as have no idea by the end of the round.
Yeah.
Realistically, it is those top two teams, though.
Yeah, it's a shootout now between Team Wellington and Auckland City for top spot and the chance to lift the premiership at the end of it. What do we call it?
Get to keep the cup.
The cup, the plate, something like that. Yeah, you would actually. Whoever wins at the end of the season would keep it forever, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I don't know where you'd store it, seeing as that no one would have a club rooms anymore. But
well, Miramar and Central, theoretically, but who knows? Who knows what the relationship between those clubs are with their franchises for following the season? It could fall by the wayside completely.
Yeah, have we had any updates about, like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, so it's very clear. It's a club-based system where, at a very simplistic level, and I haven't looked at it properly recently, but it's the Central League and the Northern Premier League and South Island League, I think, those teams all feed into a competition. The winners of those feed into a competition that happens over summer, kind of November through March, I believe it is. And that's the new National League. So it's like a super league based on who did well in the regional leagues beforehand.
Yeah.
Which means that all of those are chances for clubs to compete in the National League, which is great for teams like Western Suburbs, might want to prove themselves. What if United wanted to try and put it in the National League? They've got the money to do so, and if they can show on the park that they can do it, then that's a good system. But it means that there's no place for the franchises, particularly Team Wellington and Auckland City.
Wasn't there a club amalgamation like Caversham or something?
Yeah, Caversham. I can't remember exactly what it is, but Caversham and a couple of other clubs from down south have merged together. That, from what I've read, wasn't necessarily because of the National League, and it was going to happen anyway. It was just resources were pretty scarce. But you never know. Yeah, I mean, so it's all heard it from somebody, heard it from somebody, right? So
yeah, and there's also Tasman that's had to pull out from South Island as well.
Yeah, of course, actually. Where do they play in terms of this club system? I don't know. Nelson would be the goer there, wouldn't they?
I don't
know that region of football well enough.
No, me neither.
But that is what's happening next season. So that is announced by New Zealand Football. That's why we know that was the last World Classico. And it was a great day out. We We went and had some lunch at Gasworks and then wandered over to DVF after that and then headed into Hotel Bristol to watch the Phoenix play. So
yeah, it's a bit gutted. I missed that. It was
yeah, it's quite a good little setup they've got going on there. I kind of forgot that there's multiple levels of it. I only like peer in from Cuba Street and see the downstairs area, but actually the second level there's a big screen at the end and we just set up a bunch of tables and chairs facing it, and it was like a little hub for Phoenix supporters, a bunch of other randoms in town. It was a Saturday night or Sunday night, but the equivalent of a Saturday night. It's a bunch of people in the pub who weren't watching the game, but there was enough room for us, and they didn't have any Midori lemonade on tap, so I couldn't get my fix of Tatori and lemonades, but they mentioned these $5 cocktails on tap or something like that. So or two different ones this time around. But I went and had I bought myself a Tatori and lemonade anyway to
nice.
Honor the old honor the big man. But yeah, it was a fun night. Definitely, if you are in Wellington and want to watch the game with the other supporters, recommend getting down to the Bristol. There's no drink specials or anything like that, but it's nice just knowing that the football is the focus and they'll chuck on the big screen and you're away. So, yeah, head down to Bristol, support the club. And I think that's it for this week. Nothing else really jumps off the page to me. Shame we couldn't talk to Oofy in person, but we're doing it over the phone, to be honest.
I'm kind of enjoying it because his death stare is a bit terrifying.
Yeah, but I would have enjoyed that because you could riff on it, but we couldn't.
You don't get any visual cues, eh? You just can't kind of go,
no.
Oh, he doesn't like that question.
We weren't even doing it over Zoom for the listeners. We're doing it literally on my phone was recorded over a speakerphone. So got nothing from him whatsoever, which tricky. But hey, it was good to have him on the pod and good to hear how it's all going over in from the Australian perspective. We heard Domi's perspective last week and the Australian perspective this week. And hopefully next week we come back with 3 points. We may or may not do an episode next week. We might take a week off. Our lives are busy. We'll see what the result. If the Phoenix win 5-0, we'll probably record. If they don't, we'll see how we go. So it might be 1 week, it might be 2 weeks, but we'll definitely be back. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.
Two Man Pod brings you the 2MP. 2M Pod? 2M Pod, something. I don't know. Two Man Pod's just it, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what's the equivalent of a two man luge.
Ah.
They do a double skeleton, but.
That's probably what it are. Double skeleton? Well, you know, one of us is more skeletal than the other. <isn't it? laughs>
Way to call me a fat bastard,
yeah,
Pat.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was actually closer to death. That's what I was going for.
So much better.
Yeah. Double skeletons bring you. Avoiding Ufuk's death stare brings you.
Maddie Simon brings you.
Oh, God, I hope he doesn't score. Stefan Marinovic, starring in the feature film No Man's Land, brings you.
Gianni Stensnis for the Socceroos brings you.